Okay.
Does everyone have a handout? Right here. Okay, great. And there's also a sign-up sheet going around if you guys could make sure that everyone gets that. Just your name, your email addresses, and your student IDs. And that's for academic success for their information.
It's for academic success.
They're watching us. Well, I'd like to welcome you all to the second talk of our Writing Colloquia series. Dr. Waterman Ward will be speaking about parallel universes, a lesson in sentence structure. And I just wanted to say a little bit about the Writing Colloquia. This is actually just the second year that we've been doing this series. It was the brainchild of Matt Springs, actually hiding in the back up there. He began the colloquia last year, and we're very excited to see it continuing this year and continuing so successfully. It's been a great turnout. And so let's welcome Dr. Waterman Ward.
And you don't know who I am. It's amazing. Okay. So, you may have noticed at some point or another, you may not, somebody writing in your margins something that looks like that. And you go, :// struck. What? Okay. They're talking about parallel structure. And now I have to explain to you what parallel structure is. Of course, you have a bunch of things. When I looked at my first multiple adjectives and one noun example, which I thought was perfectly good when I first looked at it, then I realized, all right, they need something a little simpler to start. But what it is, you have sentences made up of things like subjects and objects and verbs and elements, they're called. And you can take some element, and have more than one other element have the same relationship to some single element. What that requires of the reader is to be able to recognize that this and that all relate the same way to this other thing. So you can do it with all kinds of parts of sentences. You can have one noun doing lots of verbs. Or you could have a bunch of adjectives connected to a single noun. Or you can have, you can have all sorts of things, and I'm about to tell you about some of them. But I wanted to make it very simple first. We call it parallel because they're both doing the same thing, going the same direction. Except for if you're doing geometry, parallels don't meet. But if you're doing grammar, they do in the next sentence element. Or in the sentence element that it's connected to. Maybe the sentence element before it. Okay, so here we have really simple structure of parallel things. My sister's big, stupid, white dog broke her chain. White dog. Stupid dog, big dog, any of them would work. Big, stupid, and white are all parallel. They're all doing the same thing in relation to dog. So if you were diagramming this, I know that's everybody's favorite exercise, but okay. You'd have them all, you know? Big, stupid, and white. Okay. And you could have my sister's big, bad-smelling, overeating dog broke her chain. And if you started something like bad-smelling, overeating, what do you think you would do for a sort of third thing? What would be the, if you were going to do a third sort of thing, I have to think of something that a dog would do. These two would you want in that sentence for style? Yeah. Why would that be better?
It fits in with the other two in the series.
Yeah. Bad smelling, overeating, mess making. See, you set up
a rhythm that tells the audience that these are all the same kind of thing and they're all going the same way. You always want to have the same structure insofar as you can to alert the audience that all of these things are connected to one other thing. Well, why would you do that? Instead of saying, dad smelling, overeating, messy. I mean, grammatically, it's fine. Stylistically, it holds the audience better. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the strategies, why these strategies are useful. But let's get a more difficult multiple adjective here. Okay. C.S. Lewis. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things that Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He'd either be a lunatic on the level of a man who says he's a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. Okay. Looking at that first sentence. A man who was merely a man. So this is going to tell you what kind of man. I guess I'll put them in order. This is a really complicated sentence. Okay. So, you're expected to understand that man who is connected to both of these sentences was merely a man and said the sort of thing that Jesus said. Now, this is a parallel structure that isn't stylistically identical. The second element is way longer and more complicated than the first element, though they both relate to man who in the same way. Okay. They are grammatically equivalent because you have two verbs relating to this. And, you know, two verbs with objects relating to who directly. So, grammatically, they have this parallel. And you see the parallel is written here in the diagram. But the second one's a lot longer. Now let's think of a stylistic reason why you want the second. Why, if you're making a parallel structure and you have differences among the elements, you want the complicated one last. You look at me blankly, reasonably. Okay. When you're telling a joke is a very, very elegant rhetorical structure. When you're telling a joke, what's the most important part?
Punchline.
Absolutely, the punchline. Where do you put the punchline in a joke?
The end.
Yes. Why don't you put the punchline at the beginning? You're laughing. Come now. Why not?
Wouldn't make sense.
It wouldn't make sense. You have to build up the expectation, and the most important part comes at the end when it solves the problem. Or when it's a very powerful position. You leave them laughing. You leave them crying, you leave them whatever, but the end is important. So if you have a series of things in parallel, and this is a very short series, you still put the more important thing later.
right? So he's got a parallel structure here between these two verbs and this word who. A man was merely a man. And who said the sort of thing that Jesus said? That's much longer. It's different, and it's really the heart of his sentence. Okay. He's making claims about the kinds of claims that Jesus made. And that's his argument. It's from Mere Christianity. Okay. So you have very, very simple kinds of adjectives that can be put in parallel, and very complicated ones that can be put in parallel. Let's move on to putting multiple nouns in connection to a verb, which is the second thing on your list here. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I love the way he delivered that, and so I try to imitate him. It's really good. Go listen to it on YouTube sometime. It's beautifully done. Just gorgeous, okay? Now, look at this. The sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners. So when he says the sons of former slaves, and then he starts the sons of, you know you've got a parallel structure here, and you're going to wait for the thing that connects these two things. We'll be able to sit down together. Okay, that parallel. Now, why is Martin Luther King so good at this? He uses parallel structures all the time. Read his speeches, he loves this structure. Why? You hold it in your mind because you're hearing the repetition. You know what repetition does? Have you seen commercials? Yeah, it works. Okay. And you're making the audience anticipate. So they're holding it in their mind, and they're deliberately holding it in their mind because they're waiting for the next thing that will solve the connection. It hangs in the memory a lot better than just saying something like, the descendants of slaves will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood with the descendants of slave owners. As soon as he puts it into this parallel context, you've got something that hangs in the memory. It's a good stylistic thing. It makes things really elegant. Okay. Now here, another set of parallel nouns. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. Actually, that makes a transition to the next thing too. But okay, friends, Romans, countrymen, what are they all related to?
His audience.
Okay, so you have this audience, but he doesn't say, audience, lend me your ears. He says, friends, Romans, countrymen. Okay. And so he's building up the third one being a longer word. Friends, Romans, countrymen. And also, so rhythmically it builds up. And also he's going to appeal to their patriotism. So you know what he considers the most important thing there. It's got all kinds of cool stuff. And of course it all connects to that verb. All right. And then he says, I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. Can anybody find the parallel structure in there? I'm not going to make you talk. I'm going to find someone. Yeah, what is with making you talk?
Is it to bury and to praise?
Yes! Okay. And in between, he's got a not. Okay? This is an adversative parallel, which I didn't put on your See, but I said out. Anyway, you can have a parallel structure that turns around like this, that denies. So, to bury, not to praise. And then he proceeds, of course, to praise Caesar. It's well done. Ah, but okay. If you take a look at multiple verbs to a subject, which we've just taken one look at, right, so those are parallel verbs, you see a quote from Chesterton, "What's Wrong with the World?" By the way, what's wrong with the title there?
It's not capitalized.
Right, formatting problems. Okay. I was in a hurry. Oh, well. But I should have formatted properly, and I'm sorry. Okay. The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and left untried. See what's going on here? Okay. Can you point out a parallel there? Okay. So if I had said, if I had been Chesterton, if I were Chesterton and wrote, "It has been found difficult and they didn't try it," how does that change the style?
It just kind of breaks up the flow that it naturally has.
Okay. Because you're changing subjects, so they're no longer parallel clauses, and it just doesn't hang in your mind as well.
Ta-da-da.
You have this thing that's set up in a way that makes it easy to remember. The way, instead of my saying, well, let me list the months that have 30 days and the months that have 31 days. Say, 30 days have September, April, June, and November. You guys remember that one? Okay. You remember that one. If I gave you a list, you wouldn't remember it. Rhythm, repetition, things that hang on the ear like that are memorable. They're good style. They make it possible for you to have so much more power. This is one of the reasons Martin Luther King had such power in his speeches. Just amazing. Okay. So, subjects and verbs, you've seen those before. Adverbs, what's an adverb? It describes a verb. So I can say, whenever I give a talk in front of a bunch of students, I always pick on people and make them talk back to me. Okay, whenever modifies I give a talk. That sort of thing. Okay, I point out here that I had another formatting problem. I didn't put a space between the two examples, so it made it look like Oscar Wilde invented the marriage vows. He didn't. Just pointing that out, he didn't. Okay. Some cause happiness wherever they go. Others, whenever they go. Okay. It's cute. It's parallel. Okay. And it has adverbial clauses. Whenever, wherever, and whenever. And those are adverbial about go. Okay. Okay. I take thee for my wife, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. It should be say in health, till death do us part. Sorry, another error. In sickness and in health, to death, till death do us part. Look how that goes. For better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. And then it ends, till death do us part.
what effect does it have to have all of these things for, in, till death do us part? Why is the death one put at the end?
It implies how severe you're promising when you say until death.
Okay, it's a very serious, it's the most serious part of it. Okay, it's different. Okay, so if you said, I take thee for my wife till death do us part, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. In sickness and in health would be the important part. But till death do us part is the punchline here. And that's why it's at the end. Okay. And then you have these rhythmic things. Four, in. What do they all relate to? What's the word that all of these things are connected to? These for clauses and these in clauses and this till clause.
The take.
Yes. And everything goes back to this one thing, this taking. Okay. So it repeats in the person's mind then. Every clause has to go back to that verb. Take, 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 take. The verb is actually emphasized because it has to be called out of the reader's mind. So the rhythm works and the participatory aspect of it is important. People don't think of that sometimes. Jared Manley Hopkins, my favorite poet, thought of it all the time. How are you going to draw, he called it bidding the reader in to what's being said. And a parallel structure does that because it's more like clicking a computer screen than like watching a TV. You're in it. You want to know more about this, read Marshall McLuhan sometime. Okay, let's get multiple objects to a verb. There are lies, damned lies, and statistics. What does this mean? This is actually a particular parallel figure called an ascending tricolon. Got three parts, and the emotional heat goes up. What does he mean? Why doesn't he say there's statistics, lies, and damn lies?
It's like they're worse than both of them.
Okay, so you're moving from the horrible to the more than horrible to the deeply, impossibly horrible statistics. I don't know how many of you have taken that course yet.
Actually, he just means the use of statistics, I think. Okay. And they all relate to this verb, right? Various kinds of parallels, these tricolons, these, you know, adversative parallels. They're tools. You can use them to bring your reader to understand a little bit more about actually, you use it to direct your reader's feelings, okay? So that they end up feeling about statistics the way Mark Twain feels about statistics, okay? Wouldn't do that otherwise. Okay. Now, let's look. 20 minutes, I can do this. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's look at clauses, great big things. We've done a couple of those. We did it with the Lewis thing because I just couldn't resist it. I'm sorry. But these things happen when I get into grammar. Well, I have peculiar preferences, what can I say? All right, let's look at number 6, parallel clauses. You recognize this, it's Lincoln, Gettysburg Address. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. Okay, let's look for parallel things here. Okay. Anybody see a parallel in that first sentence? Yeah? Go for it.
We cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow.
Okay.
Three parallel verbs. We cannot dedicate. Notice he makes them rhyme.
Until the last one. Dedicate, consecrate, hallow. Okay, once again, the last one has this weight. And then they all move out, you know, from we, and they come together to this ground. Okay? If he had said, we cannot dedicate this ground, we cannot consecrate this ground, we cannot hallow this ground, what difference would it make? Yeah.
Again, it's kind of just breaking up the flow of the sentence when you put the direct object in each time.
Okay, that's a metaphor that students frequently use, flow. And I think we should analyze the metaphor a little bit. But what does this actually do when he gives us verb after verb after verb? Yeah?
I'm wondering what the noun is, what's going to happen with it.
What's the object going to be? And so the verbs hang in our mind. Okay? So when you talk about flow, I mean, probably your high school teachers, and I think half the high school teachers in Texas must be taught the word flow. And I don't know how they know what they mean by it. Analyze what it is that you want. What effect do I want to have? This may not work at every lit trad paper that you're writing at 2 a.m. But if you want to write something to impress somebody, learn to use the tools. Because you can. You can shape the way people understand what you're saying. Saying the same thing, but shaping it with good phrasing. And parallel structures are absolutely basic to doing that. Okay, so let's see. Let's look at this other thing, the second sentence of that. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far above our power to add or detract. Anybody find a parallel structure in this one? Living and dead. Okay, men, living and dead. Now that would have been a good one for the thing that I did with my sister's big stupid white dog. Not only broke her chain, broke my sister's arm. Anyway, not only broke her chain, but broke her arm. Just gave you a parallel structure, guys. Okay. So, living and dead. Yes, there you have these parallel things. All right. Any other parallel structures in that one? Yes?
How to detract.
Okay. So you have these parallel verb clauses. All right. So you have here, you know, think of the names here. Shakespeare, C.S. Lewis, Mark Twain, Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln, all people.
people who did a tremendous job of persuading people. That's what these things work for. Okay? So, and now I'll take you to the Bible. The race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor to the learned. But time and chance happen to them all. This is from one of the wisdom books, Ecclesiastes. Look at the structure here. Hebrew poetry is full of parallels. Okay? Find me a parallel structure in this thing. Race is not to the swift, battle, and we supply is not to the strong, and the is not hangs in our mind, because we've had to jump back into our memory. It's a wisdom book, and it's using these parallels all the time to make you remember stuff. Okay, race is not to the swift, battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant. Same structure there. Food come to the wise, wealth, missing verb, to the brilliant. Okay. Or favor, same missing verb, to the learned. Okay. So we're here supplying verbs because we've had to remember the verb. And we had to remember the verb, or we knew we had to remember the verb because we saw the similarity in structure. If you miss putting in the similarity in structure, people won't get it. And they won't understand that you're having the same relationship between these elements and the one you want to connect it to. Okay. And then at the last, time and chance happen to them all. And that's, again, another structure. Parallel subjects happen. Okay. And that last set of clauses is set off with a but, so it's adversative. Things that mean, you know, I'm saying the opposite of what happened there. That's what buts and nots and things like that do. Okay, so here we are dealing with these structures. Now, George Orwell. Reviewing Mein Kampf. Do you know what Mein Kampf was? Okay, some of you know. Can anybody tell me what that was? I'm going to... Yes?
Hitler's book about his life and his struggle.
Right. It's absolutely incoherent. When I want to teach students how to make
a summary of an argument without putting anything of themselves in it, sometimes I've taken a paragraph from that book because it is so crazy that they can't. They can't put in their own ideas because it's so nuts. But I haven't done that at UD. I did it at my state university. Okay. So George Orwell, who was at the time a communist and moved in the direction of finally rejected communism. Good guy. Valued truth over politics. But anyway, whereas socialism and even capitalism in a grudging way have said to the people, I offer you a good time. Hitler has said to them, I offer you struggle, danger, and death, and as a result, a whole nation flings itself at his feet. You might notice parallels to our own time, but let's look at the structure of the sentence. Socialism and even capitalism in a grudging way. Is there a parallel structure in that first half of the sentence? Go for it. You smiled at me.
Yes. Yes, there is. What it does is that it takes whereas, and then it says socialism and capitalism.
Okay. And then he adds this long tail to capitalism. Okay. He's writing to England, which is at the time a capitalist country. It became a socialist country. Partly due to the ministrations of George Orwell, poor man. But okay. Socialism, even capitalism, have said. Okay, so he's saying socialism and capitalism are very much alike. And then he says Hitler is different. Hitler actually called himself a national socialist, but okay, Orwell has got his political things going on. Then you look at this. Hitler has said to them, I offer you struggle, danger, and death. Okay, any parallel structures here? Go for it. You moved. I offer you struggle, danger, and death, and a chance to answer me in class.
Danger and death.
Okay, and struggle is also parallel there, isn't it? Struggle, danger, and death. Okay, because they're all being offered by Hitler. And apparently accepted, in fact, indeed accepted by a great many people. All right. Okay. Does anybody here know this word? A positive. I'll make you do it.
It's something that renames a noun.
Okay, renames a noun, like my brother the lawyer. Okay? All the positives, and by the way, using a positives really makes your prose look elegant. It really does. There have been composition studies that showed that people admire prose more when it's got these things that rename nouns. Okay? They're all parallels. So watch to make sure that you don't mess them up. Okay. Let me give you one illustration, an adaptation of a student paper of parallel elements that aren't in the same form. And we can adjust it. I'll copy this out because it's not the sort of thing that hangs in my mind because the parallel structure is bad. Achilles, you remember that guy, was emotional about the death of Patroclus. Lent his armor, and
had sent Petroglyphs to save the day. This is a bad sentence.
Okay. If you look at it at first, you're not even sure that this person intended a parallel structure. You might think that it's Patroclus lent his armor as a kind of absolute adjective and had sent Patroclus to save the day. Wait a second. Was emotional, had sent. Actually, it was even worse in the original. It was something more like sending. Now, how do we fix this? There are a couple of things going on in here, and I want to talk about temporal stuff. Okay. Well, Patroclus isn't spelled that way in this one, is it? Oh, I'm sorry. There are ways to transliterate, but okay. I'm not teaching Lit Trad 1 this term. If you're doing a parallel structure that has a temporal element, like you're telling things that happened one after another, what order should you put them in? Yeah, usually you put them in chronological order. It really helps your reader. Okay, so this was the first thing. The student had scrambled the chronological order. Okay, so all right. Achilleus was sending Patroclus to save the day. Sending Patroclus to save the day, lent his armor, the death of Patroclus. Was he emotional about, okay. How can we fix this sentence? Yes.
What if we strap emotional about the death of Patroclus from the parallel structure? So, for example, we said Achilles blamed himself for the death of Patroclus because, and then we make the other two elements parallel.
Okay, so you're saying Achilles. Give me that first element again.
Blamed himself for.
For. And you're going to say because. And now let's make them parallel. Somebody give me parallels here. In chronological order, please.
Okay, he lent his armor and sent the Patroclus to save the day.
Okay. We have 2 minutes. Okay. I've already told you to put the most complicated one at the end. If they have internal commas, if you have let's see. I don't have anything here that's got the internal commas. I went to New Orleans, Louisiana, New York, New York, and San Francisco, California. So at the after each state, you would put a semicolon. And you put an end
An and at the end of a list, so you're signaling, hi, this is the last piece of the list. You can start looking for the element we're all connected to now, okay? Rather than hanging in the list in your mind. Every now and then, if you leave out the and, you can get a kind of emotional impact, but that's rare, the ordinary things, to put the and in there. And then, as I say, you can move on to more elegant structures. There are many elegant structures, structures like the thing called a chiasmus and that last example. And so, if you are idle, be not solitary. If you are solitary, be not idle. Go, be not idle.
You're welcome. I hope you're amused.
Thank you.